The suburb of Batoni, across the harbour from Wellington City, has for much of its life been a run-down working-class suburb, but of recent years it's begun to be on the up-and-up, to be steadily gentrified, and its shops have become interesting places to go to. One Saturday morning, during my time in Wellington, I was wandering down some of the back streets when I noticed the Anglican Church open and went in to investigate. The vicar was there and was delighted to show me over the place. Proudly he pointed out his latest innovation, a spa bath, suitably modified and installed in the chancel near the altar to provide a full immersion baptism tank. What extraordinary things these charismatic Anglicans get up to, I thought. Then a few months later, the Mount Victoria Catholic Parish opened its new church just by the Basin Reserve, and I went along to their open day. There, in the baptistry, to my surprise, was another full immersion baptism pool, a little more tastefully architecturally designed, of course. I wonder how many takers they'll get to use this facility, I thought. In the past, disagreements between the churches over baptism centred around issues such as whether it was right to baptise children who couldn't answer for themselves and whose parents weren't churchgoers, whether adult believers' baptism was the only acceptable option, and whether baptism conferred the Holy Spirit and made you a Christian, or on the other hand was more an outward declaration of the inward reality that you had given your life to Jesus some time earlier. In recent years, the churches have discovered more about what baptism was all about in the first few hundred years of the church's life, and so they've come to realise that all these arguments somehow miss the point and fail to grapple with the main issue. Baptism was a much bigger deal back then, and preparation for it was much longer and more thorough than anything we're accustomed to. Belatedly, all the churches have realised that their present practices are way below par compared to the high valuing given to baptism by the early church, and that they have got a long way to go before getting anywhere near the proper priority that should be given to this vital beginning point of Christian life. When we appreciate this, we can begin to understand all the recent enthusiasm for full immersion tanks. It helps to explain also the recent changes we've seen in our own church's baptismal practice. Private baptisms are now pretty much a thing of the past, occurring only in emergency situations. Pretty much all the baptisms now take place at main Sunday morning services or at other acts of public worship, so that the new believers can meet the community of faith and the community them. These baptisms are preceded by a clergy visit and an attempt to explain what baptism is all about. And most parishes worth their salt make some kind of attempt to follow up on their baptism families. But this is still far short of what went on in the early church. The problem for us is that attempts to insist on a higher standard of baptismal practice have often seemed to our fringe membership as though they've had water cleared on them. To them, it seems like a big deal when they make the effort to bring their children to baptism at a time when most of their neighbours don't bother. When clergy tell them that there'll be a long period of instruction first, or that if they are not churchgoers then their children won't be baptised, then they withdraw in hurt confusion and spread the message far and wide to all who will listen that the local parish church is bad news for its extended constituency. What we need to understand is that back in the days of the Roman Empire, there were many competing religious options to choose from, many of which didn't require its new members to change anything much in their lifestyle. Christianity was different in that it asked of its followers not just quite specific beliefs, but also moral changes in the way they lived. The church understood that these costly demands would take a lot of getting used to. New converts needed lots of help and preparation to get on board with a way of life that would seem unusual to their contemporaries and at times downright unpopular. The instruction that needed to be given would have to be about more than just head knowledge. New believers had to get used to worship customs. They had to be socialized into Christian expectations about hospitality, about forgiveness, about restraint and self-control. It was helpful for them to listen to stories of faith from those who had been believers for some time, about how they'd applied their faith to the dilemmas of daily living. It was useful for these beginners to have their getting ready time marked by rituals that acknowledged their step-by-step new understanding of what was expected of them, and that accustomed them to the seasons of the church's year. Above all, the church understood that all this took time, that it was a patient process that couldn't be rushed, since new Christians were becoming accustomed to a countercultural way of life that would put them up against the grain of their surrounding society. This long process was called the catechumenate. It took at least a year. It culminated on Holy Saturday night. The catechumens, who had been fasting over the Easter weekend, would be baptized by the bishop in a full immersion pool, usually the public bath in a Roman villa. And as they were led up out of the water, they were anointed with oil, or the bishop laid hands on them, as a symbol of the Holy Spirit coming upon them, and they were often given milk and honey as a sign that they entered the promised land of the kingdom. As the Eucharist of Easter was then celebrated, they were allowed to take communion for the first time. That's what our Easter Vigil service is all about at 8 o'clock on Holy Saturday night, recalling that most wonderful service of the Christian year. And this year it's going to have added significance because, of course, the bishop will be with us to carry out a confirmation in the context of all that for an adult member of our church. And in addition, in the last week, we've also come to see that we're going to be receiving a member of another Christian church into the Anglican Church. There'll be an act of reception. What we need to be doing then is to make it clear that to new believers in our church that the life of the church is a very different reality compared to those around us who don't have faith, and it often involves costly choices. One of the things that's been going wrong in the life of the church is that we haven't made this clear to people. We've just expected that those who started coming to church would somehow get the message by some invisible osmosis process, whereby they just sucked up the entire content of Christianity merely by coming along to a reasonable number of services. This kind of neglect and inattention has produced in what some cases what the American theologian Robert Jensen calls incompetent Christians. Those who think they're at the centre of the church's life, fully qualified to have authoritative opinions of what Christianity is all about, when in reality they never even got to a beginner's class. What baptism is all about, both in its preparation phase and in its impressive ceremonies, is producing competent Christians who've embraced with head and heart understanding the adventure of Christian living. Getting to the place where our baptismal practice lives up to the early church standard will take some work, but we don't have to wait for all that to happen before we can get along and do something immediate and practical now. Those who are new in our midst can benefit from our getting alongside them in simple, low-key acts of befriending that open the door for us to have the opportunity to help ground them in the ways of Christian living. When I think back to my beginning times as a teenager in the church, and in the faith, I recall gratitude the adults who made space in their lives for me. As I spent time with them, I picked up in so many small ways, both by what they said and by the details of how they lived, what it was to be a Christian. They taught me in their affairs of daily living as much as I ever learned from books, though that, of course, is important too. It takes time to become a Christian, and it's also a question of the company we keep. And we can be in a position to provide the kind of company that helps develop new believers into competent Christians.